listening to the home of cool, irreverent, and entertaining talk right here on LA Talk Radio. You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza. Only on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome. Welcome to Answers for the Family. I'm your host, Alan Cardoza. Every Monday from 11 a.m. to noon, my guest and I will bring you answers and options to raising children today and in our constantly changing future. Today, Dana Hilmer will be with us, and she's going to discuss and give us suggestions on how to keep your relationship with your partner vibrant amidst the chaos of raising kids today, whatever their age. Dana is the author of Blindsided by a Diaper, an anthology revealing the inside scoop on how parenthood changes a relationship. Dana is also the founder of LifestyleMom.com, and she'll be hosting right here on LA Talk Radio her own show entitled Lifestyle Mom Radio Cafe, premiering Tuesday, January 5th. Dana, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Alan, for having me.
Well, I am very happy to have you. If you've heard our show, you know that we try to approach just about everything that there is to do about raising families. And when I had a chance to read your book, Blindsided by a Diaper, I just thought this is absolutely perfect, because I think any of us that have gone through that, once we have those children, things change. And I know, at least from my standpoint, I didn't expect it to change that much.
I would say that as well on my end, which is why I put the book together. You know, it's funny. I think a lot of people kind of hide behind that little smiling picture of the family portrait, and I think there's a lot of stuff that, a lot of adjustment and a lot of changes that couples go through behind the scenes that they don't really talk about. And, of course, the divorce statistic is what it is, and that, so it made me really realize that we need to talk about this. You know, what are the challenges? What are the changes? And, of course, what are the beautiful aspects, too, of how you change and how you grow together? So I think, you know, opening up that dialogue is really very important.
Well, I mean, do most of the couples find that having children create more difficulties in their marriage than they do those little beautiful moments?
Well, you know, it's funny. It's difficult to say more, but I don't know if you've heard Nora Ephron's claim. She says that having a baby is like throwing a hand grenade into a marriage. So I don't know that I personally agree with a statement that strong, but I do think that in the very beginning stages, that first 6 months when you're sleep-deprived, your life is completely changed, your roles that you're taking on are changing, it is challenging. And I do think that luckily that little baby smiles at you and is adorable, and it's all worthwhile. But yeah, there are challenges and there are changes. And I think having a baby makes you more of who you are to begin with as a couple. And I think that's really the most important thing is, you know, before kids, if you are a couple that communicate well, chances are after kids you will be too. Before kids, if you're a couple that handles stress well together and respects each other's, you know, differences and can talk about how to handle things together, that's something that will also show up in a really good way once you have a child. The flip side, though, of course, is if you have some cracks in your relationship and cracks in the way you communicate and handle stress together, then that's probably going to show up a little bit more once the baby arrives as well.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, what are some of the most common changes? Share some of those with us.
You know, it's interesting. In the book especially, I explored quite a few ways in which a relationship changes, and I kind of divided the book into various categories kind of representing these ways. You know, I think one of the big changes that you have as a couple is the roles that you take on now are very different, and you're operating in very different worlds. And whether you're doing the traditional thing of, you know, male being the breadwinner, woman staying home, or if it's the other way around, or if you're sharing the duties 50-50, whatever it is, the roles that you take on really do change the relationship, because it changes what you're thinking about, what you're doing, and the world that you're operating in every day. And sometimes that clashes, and sometimes you're kind of living in parallel universes. And so I do think that that is a big way that couples' relationships change. I think, of course, communication, too. Mm-hmm. You know, I think anybody out there that has a baby or has young children realizes that, you know, communication is just such a beautiful thing to have, because you so rarely have that, you know, luxurious half hour to sit down and chat. You know, you mm-hmm. have a lot of interruptions. You have sometimes you're speaking in staccato to one another and just completing each other's sentences, and you kind of figure out what the other's saying. Sometimes you revert to email or to post-it notes. But it's just interesting that luxurious time to communicate does change, and I think how each couple, you know, adapts to that is different. And it's important to make time, of course, for
right.
communication.
Right, and I think you're absolutely right. And I think it also, I mean, for hopefully most of us will be able to see that as how much more valuable that time becomes when it is something that's that rare.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's interesting, there's one essay in the book, and I think it's just such a beautiful essay. Hope Edelman wrote it. It's called The 3 a.m. Marriage. And their solution may not work for everybody, but for them, you know, they are both working, and they have two young daughters, and the time that they find that that's their beautiful, precious time is in the wee hours in the morning after they've both slept for a few hours, and they usually wake up and they spend about a half hour together, and that's the time that they connect, that they talk, that they make decisions, that they find time for romance, and it was just such a beautiful way to, I think, come up with a solution that really is their time. Now, of course, everybody has their own solution, whether it's a date night or just taking 10 minutes each night to talk, but I think you need to make communication a priority, and even if it's just sitting down for 5 or 10 minutes, looking at each other in the eyes and really, just like you did pre-kids, ask them, how was your day? You know, tell me what you're thinking. You know, what were your challenges today? And really have a conversation looking at each other, not just running around doing things. Because I think that happens a lot, especially when you have young kids. You're running around doing about 5 things at once.
Absolutely. And I read that one as well, and I liked it. And what I saw in that one that they called the 3 a.m. marriage was the mm-hmm. fact that it became a daily thing. And I think a lot of us get in a situation to where we think a date night, you know, once a week, and then that becomes maybe once a month, and mm-hmm. we get so wrapped up in all the things that we're doing for the kids that we've, you know, that we've forgotten how precious that time that we can have. So yeah, that was one of the ones that I liked as I went through and picked out the ones that.
Well, you know, it's interesting too. You see a lot of magazines writing up, you know, the importance of date night, and of course that's so wonderful and ideal. But a lot of couples, especially now in the recession, don't have the luxury to get a babysitter and to take that kind of time. It becomes an expensive night. And so I like to remind people that date night doesn't mean that you have to go out. Date night can be getting the kids to bed a little bit early and saying, you know what, we're going to plan a nice dinner, just the two of us. Or we're going to get those kids to bed early and we're going to sit on the sofa and instead of flipping on the TV, have some music, turn up the lights, and spend some time together. You know, so I think, again, it's just giving yourself that time and that permission to slow down and to make each other a priority.
Well, let me ask you this. What surprised you and your husband most about how your relationship changed at that time?
You know, I think that's a great question. And just kind of as a background, my husband and I have been together since we were 20. And we had our first child at age 35. And we now have 3 young boys. So we had a lot of time to be together just as a couple and before having kids. And so we were surprised that things changed. And I think the biggest way that things changed, I would say two, actually. One is the fact that we were operating in parallel universes a lot of times. You know, he, in the first few years, took on the role of being the primary breadwinner. And I, in the first few years, to my surprise, took home the stay-at-home mom role. And I say to my surprise, because I've always been a very ambitious career-wise, and I surprised myself that I wanted to stay home for those first couple of years. And that was a beautiful time. And I'm grateful I had it. But I think what was challenging was the conversation at the end of the day kind of met a wall a little bit, that, you know, I would want to blurt out all the cute little things and the frustrations of keeping up the house and, oh my gosh, you wouldn't believe this diaper. And, you know, I mean, the things that were on my mind were so not the things that were on his mind. He was worried about supporting a family, and he was stressed about a job, and when he came home, he was just tired and needed time to relax like so many people do when they get home. And a lot of times I looked at him as being my relief when he came home, like, yay, the relief pitcher's here, let me pass off the kids so I can go for a walk, you know. So I think it was that adjustment that was the challenge. And I think kind of what we were talking about before, the communication that goes with that, you know, the communication of what you're talking about and you know, how you're relating to one another, and the fact that time, of course, is so much more challenged. So I'd say that was the biggest change that we experienced.
Well, now your story sounds similar to one of the stories that's in the book, and that was the one called Not Perfect, But Loving Him Anyway. I think that was Lisa McLeod. And I think she talked about in there the same thing, because they had been together a long time and they had had a very good relationship in the sense that they shared different duties throughout the house, that she just naturally assumed that he was going to be able to step right into that role once the baby was there. Tell us a little bit more about that as it related to you and as Lisa discussed it.
Well, I think as Lisa discussed it, you know, it's funny, I think she had this notion of what parenthood would be kind of based on sitcoms. You know, you
right.
kind of think of the Brady Bunch
right.
or you think of, what was the other one she mentioned? Father Knows Best. You know, I think
yeah.
she had this vision of the father comes home and happy and smiling and ready to take over with the kids. And, you know, I think she had this notion of who she'd be too with that, you know, that she'd have dinner already and, you know, life would be perfect. And I think what she realized is that even though her husband was very much a hands-on person, it did change when the kids came because, again, he was really keeping up a really big end of the stick. You know, he was working and he was doing a lot. And I think she, you know, obviously was managing the day-to-day minutia. And I think she found surprising how much detail and how much time goes into the logistics of managing a family. I think one thing I love in that essay, and I don't know if you picked up on this too, Alan, but she commented that she reached a point at one point where she was kind of down. She's like, oh my gosh, you know, we're really not co-parenting the way I thought we would. You know, I thought this would be much more of a 50-50.
Well,
and she came across a book, and I think it was called Becoming Parents. And in the book, it talked about a study that revealed that men, when they talk about what they do and what they contribute to a relationship, they compare themselves to their father.
Right.
Women, when they talk about what they contribute to the relationship, they compare themselves to their husband. So what she realized she'd been doing all the time was saying, well, I'm doing this and you're not doing that. You know, so it's this tit-for-tat kind of comparison. But when she realized that, wait a minute, compared to what he grew up with, he was this amazing father. He was doing so many things that his father never did and never thought to do, and men of that generation. And so he never really understood her frustration. He's like, well, wait a minute, I'm doing this, that, and the other thing. And so when you kind of put that in perspective and realize you're coming from different places. And
right. I was going to say, one of the things that I really liked about that was that she got to there was a part that was a little bit frustrating, but then what I liked was she got to the point of sort of acknowledging that she was becoming resentful, and when other people would compliment him, when they would see that, you know, he was changing a diaper, he was doing this,
right.
and she was finding herself getting resentful about it, but then she kind of got to the point that said, you know he's actually just looking for kind of an ego boost from me. He's getting it from everybody else, and I'm the only one not giving it to him. So I like the fact that she figured that out, and you're right. She mm-hmm. gives a lot of credit to the book. The book was called The Transition to Parenthood, How a First Child Changes a Marriage. And you're right. I think that helped her so much to not be resentful and to really appreciate what he was doing rather than seeing it as not enough. Because it wasn't 50% or whatever her vision was, which, like you said, she openly admits in there that she watched mm-hmm. she watched too many television shows and let that influence what was supposed to be the right parenting percentages or something.
I think one thing she did in the essay, and Alan, you asked me kind of how it relates to me too. One thing she did in the essay is she also, I think, explored what she thought the roles would be. And because the roles they took on ended up being different than a preconceived notion, at first she thought it was bad. But then she kind of realized, well, what does work in a relationship? Well, it actually works for her to be a little bit of the delegator, right? It's kind of the mastermind mm-hmm. of the plan, and to be the woman in charge of the calendar, and to be, because the fact is she's detail-oriented and the husband isn't. And it works for him to do other things that she doesn't think to do. And so you can come into, I think, parenthood with these preconceived notions, but I think you also have to look at who you are as a couple and what your strengths are. And I think she did that at the end of the essay, and I think that's one thing that I've done, is that, you know, can I say, do we do everything 50-50? Absolutely not. But there are some things that my husband does that he's so much better at doing than I am, including cooking dinner, And I'm so grateful for that. And there's some things that wouldn't enter his mind, like some of the daily minutiae or some of the calendar stuff, where, quite frankly, I think it's better that I'm in charge of it because I am the detail person. So I think I'm kind of settling into accepting that certain roles kind of take its place because of who you are as a couple, and it doesn't need to be that perfect scenario, and it might really work out better that way, letting go of those preconceived expectations.
Right. One of the things that I sort of got out of it as I was reading, and I was sort of looking at it from his point of view. In other words, the husband was not writing this, but I was kind of looking at, you know, I wonder what he was going through. And one of the things was that if he was a very successful man and a leader in what he was doing at work, that it may be that this is one outlet to where he was just allowing himself to sort of be the assistant and go, you know, mm-hmm. what? I'm just going to be the assistant. I have so much responsibility on me and everything else that I do. I'm just going to sit back and just do what I'm told, be the assistant, fill in where I think I can help. And she makes the comment in there that it would have been okay if he was the assistant, if he was one of those go-get-em assistants that goes out and does the things that the manager never even thought of, you know.
Right, the chop-chop Donald Trump type of assistant, right?
Exactly. That, you're right. That's the word she used. And,
right.
You know, but if you think about it, I mean, now that's really micromanaging, because now you're saying, well, look, I want you to be this assistant when I need you to be the assistant, but now you have to be just this exact kind of assistant, you know, and so it to me just seemed like, you know, she was really, really, based on her expectation, kind of operating.
I think that kind of brings up to something that I think a lot of couples experience. I think a lot of women, because they're usually more often than not in charge of the day-to-day, feel like it's their way or the highway. You know, there's a way to do it, you know, and the husband may roll up his sleeves and do things, but may not do things her way, whether it be her way with the children, her way with the house. And so therefore, somehow, according to the woman's measuring stick, he has either failed her or disappointed her. Well, who says we're the boss? Who said it's our way, right? So I think sometimes kind of looking at what they do and be grateful for what they do, it may not be your way, but you know what? Thank you. So,
right.
And I think we're all guilty of that. I'll certainly speak for myself. I've certainly been guilty of that. And so I think that's something very careful to watch out for, because I think it develops a lot of resentment if a partner, whether it's a man or woman, rolls up their sleeves and wants to not only help but really contribute in a, you know, meaningful way, and all they get greeted with is you didn't do it right. That's just not a good place to be in a relationship. So it's just something to watch, because I think we're all guilty of that to a certain degree.
Well, I certainly agree, and people also have to look at, the world has changed. You know, so if you look at it, you know, X amount of generations ago, you know, 4 or 5 generations ago, most people grew up, married somebody in their hometown, everybody knew everybody, and so there was a basic culture of that particular town. You know, today we have people of all cultures traveling all over the world. You're meeting people raised in a completely different fashion, and and you're right. It needs to be appreciated, or at least looked at and said, you know, I realize this is different, but I certainly appreciate that they're trying within the comfort zone that they were brought up in.
Mm-hmm. You know, one thing too, that to add to that, and I think it's uniquely wonderful to this generation, is that both men and women grew up with this notion of equality. But in that notion, there's some innate challenges. You know, I think the men fell in love in many cases with a woman who's a career woman or educated or whatever. Now, if she takes on the role of being a stay-at-home mom, often she's a different person than she was when he met her. Likewise, a woman who may be educated and may think, oh, I'm going to be this career woman, I'm going to do this, that, and the other thing, may have found that being superwoman isn't what she wants, may all of a sudden realize that, you know, there's different ways that I can approach this and things that I can do that may not be what my mom did, may not be what my mom's generation did, may not be what I thought I would do, but all of a sudden is faced with this notion of, wow, how do I want to do this? In fact, that's a lot of what Lifestyle Mom is about, is how are you going to create for yourself and create for your family a life that you love in your way, defining success your way. And I think that's a wonderful challenge we have, and it is a challenge, because I think a lot of people are back to the drawing board of, well, how do we want to do this? How do I want to juggle work and family? You know, how do I want to define myself? And I think in the past there were these notions of, a woman's a stay-at-home mom, or she's a working mom. Well, there's a whole big spectrum, and people go in and out of that. You know, people don't neatly fit into categories. You know, so I think the woman, and men, more men now too, are going in and out of what it means to be at home with the children, what it means to be out in the workforce, and how they're defining that for themselves as a family. And there's a huge spectrum, there's a huge amount of opportunity, I think, mm-hmm. and possibility that people are creating now, and I think that's very exciting. But I do think there's a lot more choices and a lot more that people are thinking about now because they're trying to figure out what they want.
Well, let me ask you this question, and from a male perspective, I mean, if there is a situation to where you have a career woman who is now in a position to where obviously they're going to be home for a period of time, and mm-hmm. now if the husband feels that he is doing something very wonderful by saying, you know, why don't you go ahead and continue to stay home longer? This will give our children more influence of you rather than the maid, you know, or, mm-hmm. or the housekeeper or, you know, the nanny. Now, at the point of him saying, okay, you get to do this, and her return response is, you can't tell me what to do. You can't tell me I'm not going to work. I went to college just like you, and I'm going to work, mm-hmm. and I'm going to do this. And you go, whoa, wait a minute. We think we're offering something good, and if mm-hmm. the situation was reversed, there's now a lot of men that would go, you know what? I would love that opportunity.
And I think a lot of men, my husband included, would love that opportunity. You know, I think it's a gift to be able to be home, you know, with your kids. So I think you bring up something that's a really good point and something that I very much experienced. I think, you know, my husband very much said, you know, hey, listen, do you want to stay home for the first 6 months with the kids? That'd be great if you could. And pre-baby, you know, even up to the very last moments before giving birth, I was like, well, I'm going to go back and have a job share. You know, that was my solution. I knew exactly what I wanted to do, and I was going to go back 3 days a week and didn't want to skip a beat. Truth be told, that 9-10 weeks gone by, and there was no way I was ready to go back. And I was mm-hmm. so grateful to have that opportunity. And I think you don't really know how you feel until you're in it. And I think how you feel a week after the baby was born is different than how you feel 6 months after the baby is born, and it's different than how you feel when the baby is two, and it's different than how you feel when the baby goes to school. And so I think that it's such a, you have to grow with it. You know, I think you have to grow as the baby grows, and I think your ideal of what you're trying to create for yourself and your family changes consistently as they change. And a lot of flexibility is required with that, I think.
Right. Well, flexibility, and I think that in communication. I mean, if you needed to communicate that things were changing, because if you explained your plan in the very beginning, look, honey, this is what I'm going to do, so I'm going to go back to work at this time, and he's planning for that, okay, now there's something that's changing in you. And in the same sense, if you were planning on going back and the husband sees and says, hey, honey, why don't we go ahead and have you stay longer? You know, I think both people are operating from the standpoint of wanting to do something good for their family. They just have mm-hmm. to—they have to communicate it to each other so that they know that it's coming from a good place, not a sense of control to where I'm now making the decisions and I'm controlling the fact that you either are working or aren't working or whatever.
Right. You got to communicate and see if you're on the same page. Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Well, let me ask this. I mean, when you sat down to write this book, what were you hoping readers would take away from it?
You know, I think what I was hoping was that people would find, I guess, A, that they're not alone, that they're not the only couple that has changed for better and for worse since having kids. And B, I think just open up the conversation. You know, I think there's so many ways things change. You know, again, challenging, but also beautiful. I think you fall in love with your partner all over again. I think you are a team in the most amazing sense of the word. I mean, I think there's just such beautiful ways that you change as well. I just think that conversation needs to be out there, because to me it was very alarming to see that not only did 50% of marriages end in divorce, but the two prime times that they're, the two top times of divorce, one is after the first year of marriage, and two is once a child enters kindergarten. And so clearly there are some changes and some responsibilities and everything else that happens after having a baby that couples aren't always adjusting to as well as I think they thought they would. So I think to open up that conversation is very important, mm-hmm. and to have it be something that they know that, hey, listen, you're not alone. And even if it's a challenge, to see the humor in that challenge. you know, I think there's always kind of something that you can look at and find the humor in it as well.
Yeah, you know, I had read some of the statistics about the first year of, you know, after the child is born. I hadn't read the one about going into kindergarten. What do you think is bringing that one in?
You know, my hunch, and this is just a hunch, is that you've kind of gone through your period of, you know, the first 3-4 years. I think you have gone through a period that is a lot of challenges, a lot of sleepless nights, and I think at that point, I think you're kind of wanting to get a little bit of your old life back. You know, I think you're seeing that the kid's going to go to school, and you want to get a little bit of your old life back, but you might not realize, you may realize, we're really not communicating, or we're really not romancing the way we used to, or we're really not connecting, and you start feeling the toll, I think, if you haven't been having your relationship be a priority in those first few years.
Well, now, could it, so, and I think it could also be the fact that may be when lots of, in most cases, women go back to work, which then has put them put them back into an adult environment. And and it may be that they now look at that because their relationship has changed in the marriage, and that they're now back in this, wow, I really like interacting with adults. You know, and that may be part of the problem as well.
Yeah. Well, what's interesting, too, is now if you have two people back in the workforce, whether it's full-time or part-time, you also have a whole new distribution of the roles. Mm-hmm. You know, you've got to renegotiate how you're doing everything, because I think some women that have gone back into the workforce feel that they're still doing everything they used to do, you know, in terms of maintaining the household and the child schedules and everything. And I think that is a point of contention, you know, with a lot of women that feel like, okay, wait a minute, I'm back in the workforce now, I can't do it all. So it's really a time of renegotiation. It's a time of communication and really saying, okay, if I'm gonna, you know, do this, and when I say this too, it could be the husband that's going back in the workforce, maybe he was home. Either way, if all of a sudden you have two people, the partners, both in the workforce, it's a point of transition, and you need to really talk about, you know, what roles you're going to take on and how you're going to do it in a way that's fair.
Okay, well, we're going to take a break. We are on with Dana Hilmer. Her book is Blinded by a Diaper. And Dana, when we come back, I'd like to talk a little bit about some of the specific essays. All right?
Sounds great.
We'll be back in 1 minute.
Founded over 25 years ago to meet the needs of families in crisis, West Shield specializes in resolving adolescent issues that negatively impact the family. From preteen to young adult, we are experienced and qualified to help. We offer solutions which include referrals to a network of top professionals internationally that we work very closely with in the fields of educational consulting, psychology, and psychiatry. Our in-home crisis intervention care program helps to stabilize families and bring effective resolution. We are supported by our licensed investigation company that enables us to offer legal and expert services for locating runaway teens and more. Our therapeutic transportation services help to ensure that adolescents in crisis are safely provided transportation to specialized schools and programs with unmatched experience and success. Simply put, West Shield Adolescent Services is the best solution when your family is facing personal crisis. Call 1-800-899-8585 and let us help you.
We're back, and we are talking with Dana Hilmer. Dana, I was looking at some of the essays, and one of the ones that really seemed to address the male side of the working mother situation was called Breastlessness.
Yeah, that's a great one.
Tell me a little bit about that one.
Well, I think Breastlessness, the title for that essay, comes from the realization that there really can never be equality in parenting, because it comes down to one thing. Women have breasts and men don't. So there you go. It can never be equal. So I like that he kind of brought it down to that and realized that there is an inherent difference in what we bring to the table as parents. And that no matter how hard you strive for absolute equality, that difference does exist. And, you know, his wife is in the workforce, and he is a writer. And, I think one thing that he kind of realizes as the male is that he has no problem, you know, leaving on a business trip for 2 days or 3 days or 4 days, where she is the woman, she feels like, you know what, I want to get back within 2 days. And it's not only a matter of responsibility. I think it's a matter of the heartstrings. And I think a matter of the attachment that she has, you know, with her child or children, being away for those periods of times, and that relationship is different. This is, of course, their relationship, but that relationship is different for her than it is for him, and he has a little bit more flexibility and liberties as a result of the fact that he's not quite as tied down.
Mm-hmm. Well, and personally, I was in a situation where my time is more flexible, and I became the room dad, and which was nice. I mean, once the kids went to preschool and then to kindergarten, mm-hmm. and I just absolutely reveled in the role. I mean, in being a part of it, and things are changing, because when I first went in, there were forms that said, if you'd like to be a room mom, sign up right here. And it said right on the form, it said, you know, room mom, and everything said
right.
Mom. And I filled out the document. I didn't change anything or whatever. I just filled it out. And when that particular teacher announced to everybody who the room parents would be for this particular mm-hmm. school year, she said, you know, we will have Mr. Cardoza will be room parent for Tuesdays or whatever. And said, and by the way, we are changing the form. The form will now read room parent.
Right.
And she made it a point. And she said, and I just want everybody to know, he didn't ask to change the form or anything else.
Yeah, you know? That's great. You know? And what's so great is you're seeing more and more men being very involved with their kids, whether it's in the school or coaching, and certainly the role that they're playing on the home front. And so that is changing, and that's a wonderful thing. And I think it's very personal for whatever the choice there that the couple makes, what works for them as a couple. But I love the fact that is a way that our society has changed. And I think, you know, 20 years ago, 30 years ago, that may not have been something a man not only would have considered, but even been, you know, like, what are you doing? You know,
right.
Why would you do that? Or why would you stay home? You know, I think now people respect that, and it's great.
I think you're right. I think 20 years ago, other men would have made fun of them, you know, and things like that. And again, when the kids were very young, I think at that point there were 4 male room parents in that school. And that was at kindergarten. I mean, by the time they left, left 5th grade, you know, I think there was over 20, you know, so mm-hmm. just,
that's great.
Yeah, so just in a matter of about 5 years, there was a huge increase, which I thought was just incredible. And I think it really helped. A lot of the boys I felt, were more comfortable with going to a male than a female at times when they were having problems with some of their schoolwork. So I think it gave them things that they could talk about that maybe they didn't think that the female teacher or female room parent, you know, that they were as comfortable with. So I thought it was
good.
That's
fabulous. I also think you see a lot more couples having flexible work situations now. Personally, I feel very fortunate because my husband works from home more often than not. You know, he travels as needed, but him working from home has allowed him to be part of the boy's life in a way that he wouldn't have been able to, and certainly a way that my father wasn't, you know. So he is part of the little things like having a snack when they get off the school bus, or going to the team sports, or being able to go to the friendship feast, which my little guy Danny is doing on Friday. He can take off, you know, the half hour or hour and go and spend time in the school and do that. And so I think you see more and more families having that kind of flexibility. And then likewise, more women that are in the workforce that are able to be flexible as well. And I fall into that camp, and I feel very fortunate because I've been able to kind of carve out work that I'm able to do primarily from home as well. And so that trend, and I think the internet helps us with that trend greatly, that there's so much now that people can do from home, and so many companies that are willing to be flexible. And yeah, obviously case by case by people's careers, but more of that exists certainly, which has opened up a lot of options for families.
Well, in speaking of the internet, and obviously, I mean, it's a double-edged sword. One of the essays, which was called "Harried with Children," and they talked about the communication break. Now she mentions that both she and her husband were notorious, or are notorious, electronic geeks. Let's talk a little bit about that, because I think there we may have a situation of kids that are going to start losing that level of communication that we have. You know, that we've interacted with human beings, you know, to where I think you can get to the point of having too much. If your parents are instant messaging you and your parents are shooting over emails and such, you're not really getting a lot of personal touch. So
It's something I'm worried about as a parent. I think I'm very strict when it comes down to computer time, TV time, screen time of any kind. I'm a very strict parent as far as that's concerned, and I don't want my kids plugged into an iPod, and as great as it is, put it in a speaker set. You know, I don't want to have them plugged out. I think you see so many kids now that are texting when they're at Disney World, you know, for example,
right. Which
I did see at Disney World this past season. They're texting their friends about what they're doing rather than just looking around and enjoying it. Or they're, you know, kids are so plugged in with their iPods that people can't even talk to them because they don't even hear anybody, you know. So that is a big issue. And I do think that how you communicate at home as a couple, that is what your children learn from. So whether you communicate well, you know, certainly how you resolve conflict, because that's always going to be part of any relationship, but how you resolve it is what they're going to model their ability to negotiate and resolve conflict after. So your kids need to see you being a person, being a human being, and not being attached to a computer, and not being attached to your BlackBerry. And it's funny, I think it is easy to get caught up in it. It's easy to get, you know, addicted to checking your phone, but I think you need to make some rules for yourself. And I know that's something I work on, because there's no distinct line for me between where work exists and where family life exists. There is a blending. And so, you know, little simple rules for myself, like when I'm at the playground, don't check the BlackBerry. When I'm at the beach with the kids and we're taking out lunch, phone is off, you know. So making those rules, because you can catch yourself, and then you realize, what am I doing? You know, I'm checking the phone instead of listening to what they're saying. And I think, you know, a lot of people are guilty of being caught in that, and I'm trying to be very conscious of it, but I do think it's something we need to be aware of, absolutely.
Well, I agree, and I love, there was a little term that you started with that I really like, and it says that they're plugged out. I mean, so many people, they use the term, okay, well, you know, I'm going to go plug into my iPod, or I'm going to go plug in.
Right.
But if you really think about it, it's not including. It's actually excluding. So it is actually plugged out. So I like that. I'm going to use that.
Good. I'm glad, because, yeah, it really is a concern. Did you by any chance, Alan, read the essay called The Drop Ball by Susan Cheever?
No, I didn't get to that one.
It's the last one, so that doesn't surprise me. But I wanted to just kind of call that to your listeners' attention, because I think I close the book with this particular essay because I think it's such a poignant message. Susan approaches her essay from the perspective of having been divorced twice and having two children, each child with a different father. And her essay was one of reflection and one of sadness, that she realizes now, after the fact, that when her children were young, the children are so sweet and soft-smelling, and her husband became so hairy and grumpy, you know, like that whole comparison, that she got so wrapped up in the baby and also very focused on her career that there really wasn't room for her to also focus on her husband. And I think in hindsight, she realized that she, quote-unquote, dropped the ball on her husband. And now when she sees her children meet their fathers and then have to leave their fathers after a visit, she realizes, oh my gosh, you know, the best thing I could have done for them ever was to have a good relationship with my husband, and the pain that that's put her children through. And I think for me, it's a reminder, because I think this is something that we can all be reminded of the fact that your relationship is so very important and central to the family and to the well-being of those children and to, of course, your happiness. And if you drop the ball on that, over time, that can take its toll. And I think that's what happens to a lot of couples. You know, certainly the couples that may find themselves in divorce court, you know, that they weren't able to prioritize. And, you know, everybody's story, of course, is very different. But I think it's just a reminder, and it serves to remind me, that I need to make my relationship with my husband a priority. And those nights where the kids go to bed and I run up on my computer because I want to get more done, I'm like, wait a minute, this is my time to connect with my husband. You know, we haven't had a couple nights together because we've been working after the kids go to bed. Like, just to slow yourself down and say, wait a minute, I can't let the whole to-do list and the whole minutia of our busy life take priority over being with him and carving that time with him. And it's just a very powerful essay and a powerful reminder.
Well, I'm really glad that you brought that one up, and now I'm going to make sure that I finish the book.
yeah.
I I couldn't agree more, and I think that sometimes, and in male or female, that we can all do it, and I think that we look at these little people as what they need. In other words, when you make your decision on where you're placing your time, mm-hmm. and I think I've been guilty of this, is that you look at what someone needs, and if you have married someone who is, you know, you love them and you respect them and you think of them as being strong and not being needy, well, then you tend to not think that they need that much, so that you don't give them that much. So you, mm-hmm. you focus on the children because you go, this is who needs it right now the most. And I'm so glad you brought that up, because I think, you know, I know that I was guilty of it, and I think a lot of us are, and especially mm-hmm. those of us who really do feel that we're doing everything we can to do the right thing.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's interesting. I think the recession too has kind of brought out a positive thing, and that is kind of regrouping on what is important. I think, you know, there's been this whole notion, I think, in America of, you know, affluenza, the whole bigger is better kind of mentality. Bigger is better with the houses and better cars, et cetera. And I think there's an awful lot of families out there spinning their wheels trying to maintain a certain lifestyle. And I guess we're all doing that, but, you know, I think a lot of people aspired for that bigger, better, and then as a result, you're kind of locked in to a lifestyle that's more difficult to maintain, and then in the recession, of course, things are different and more difficult if an income is lost. With that said, though, I think there's kind of a new perspective of looking at what the priorities are and looking at what really matters. And I think when it comes right down, certainly to the children, all they really care about is spending time with you. And I think when it really comes down to it, too, with adults, you can lose your house, you can lose your job, but if you have each other, and ideally have your health, then an awful lot of the other stuff doesn't matter either, you know. So I think it's just kind of a check that you got to kind of check in with yourself and say, you know, what am I working this hard for, and what is it that we're trying to achieve here, and what is our vision of success? Why are we doing what we're doing? Is it really our priority? Are we living according to our priorities? And if we're not, try to change it, you know. I think the recession is kind of serving as a reminder of that right now, which is kind of the silver lining, I guess, if you want to call it that.
Well, what are your tips, I mean, for keeping a relationship alive and fresh and living in this wonderfully chaotic world of raising kids?
And this, I have to say, this applies for kids of all ages, too. It's certainly not just the baby ages. You know, I call it my four C's, and we've talked about some of it today already. But the first really is to communicate, you know, to really try to end each day with a good, honest 10-minute conversation. You know, you might not get the luxury of a night out. You might not get a whole Saturday morning together, but you can carve out 10 minutes, and you can make that a priority, and to really talk and connect, and to try not to talk about the do list, and to try not to talk about logistics, but really have it be about the two of you. So communication, of course, is very, very important. And, you know, the other C, the next C, is connect, and that's really time together. And I think to kind of think about what brought you together to begin with, you know, I think before having kids, the focus is on what you like to do together, whether it's playing tennis or going sailing or going for walks or whatever it happens to be, but to try to reconnect in a way that brings you back to what makes you play and what makes you laugh together, because playing and laughter is a great thing, and I think just incorporate that into your life and to try to do it, you know, as regularly as you can, and to be kind of spontaneous, too, with how you're connecting. You know, I think in those early days of courtship, you know, things are so spontaneous, and you just give the I love you note just because, and the let's hop off because, and I think, you know, of course, as we get older and have more responsibilities, we lose some of that spontaneity, but just to kind of interject that in your life once in a while. Yeah. You know, certainly on the romance level, that's a great thing to do as well, of course. And then the third tip is really to create plans together and to create dreams together as a couple. You know, whether your dream is small or your plan is as small as, you know, we want to be able to take a weekend away with the kids, or if it's as big as, you know, we want to buy a boat. You know, to have a dream, to have something that you're working towards together is just such a great thing. And also to create a time that you have that's a tradition for you as a couple. So one thing that my husband and I do is, you know, when we kind of close out of the workday and we start making dinner, mm-hmm. you know, we end up having a little cocktail or bringing out some cheese and crackers. And I'm a real lightweight, so I usually can only do half a glass of wine. But it's really kind of about that little ritual, I think, that mm-hmm. you have that little ritual that signifies end of day. And it's just time to relax. And usually we turn on the music. You know, the music's been quiet all day and the music goes on or we're making dinner. But to have that little tradition that you have that's just your own, I think is really just terrific. And the last point that I'd love to make and tip is really to celebrate who you are as a couple. You know, why did you fall in love with this person? And to kind of take time to appreciate and to celebrate what each person brings to the equation right now. I think, you know, you're juggling a lot with family and with kids and with jobs and household stuff, and there's just so much to juggle, and to just appreciate, you know, what each other's doing and just kind of say thanks. You know, this is a lot, and I just appreciate what you're bringing to the table, and to kind of celebrate that in each other, I think is just a really great thing to do.
Well, yeah, and I think that makes sense with kids, without kids. you know, really, it's. I think you've hit on some great things. I like the four C's. You know, if you're going to keep the marriage alive, you need to communicate. You need to continually connect. I love your thing about create. You know, make sure that you're constantly creating new things, and celebrate each other. Celebrate, you know, the things that we have instead of, and especially as you said with this economy. You know, a lot of people are focusing on what they don't have now. Well, you know, I'll listen to people and they'll go, well, you know, I had this and we used to be able to do that, but I can't do this. And, you know, we're still in a wonderful nation. We still have a lot of things that many people don't have. And you're right. We need to celebrate that. You mentioned about, you know, setting up, you know, planning a vacation with the kids. And we got to plan those ones without the kids, too.
Yeah, exactly. It's a little bit harder to pull off, but, yeah. but if you can do it, go for it.
Well, as a,
yeah, I think one kind of final comment too, and I think it's just the whole notion of living in the moment. And I think you know, we don't really remember whole days; we remember moments. And so, whether it's just stealing that moment to give your partner a special look, or whether it's, you know, enjoying that moment with your kids and seeing them laugh. I mean, if you're just taking in that moment and stealing whatever little moments you can and just take it in for all it's worth. I think that's the great stuff, and that's the stuff we kind of forget about when we're running around doing a zillion things, and just really try to live in that moment and take it in as much as you can.
Well, one of the moments, and we're starting to run out of them on this show right now, I just looked over at the clock. We're almost out of time. We've got about 3 or 4 minutes. I'm sure there are people that may still have additional questions or may want to know how to get the book. So tell us where we can get the book, or how they can get a hold of you.
Thank you. I appreciate that. The website for the book is www.blindsidedbyadiaper.com. I'm also launching a website called lifestylemom.com, and it'll be launching next Monday. So, and in that website, I think mothers will find all sorts of great resources and insights and just great thought-provoking articles and essays on the things that matter to us most. You know, what it is you're trying to create for your family, what it is you're trying to create for yourself in your life, living a healthy life, simplifying your life. It's really, I think, a place that I'm trying to create that's really all about the mom and what it is she is trying to create in her life. And it's not giving parenting advice, but it's really touching upon a lot of the topics and issues and choices that many women are making today.
Right. Now,
so lifestylemom.com.
And are these the topics that you'll be touching on for your show?
Yes. Okay. Yes, they will be. In fact, the show is going to be interviews with a lot of women that are just so inspiring. I think there's so many great people we can learn from, and the people I'll be interviewing are women that are authors, that are entrepreneurs, that are doing work to help families and to help children. I think they're the women that I think that we can learn from because we're inspired that they have kind of carved out a way that works for them in their life. And I think when you hear somebody who's inspiring, you can always kind of take a little nugget of what they say and hopefully learn and apply that to your life. And it's those type of people that I'll be interviewing. And it's on all the topics that, you know, really women are wrestling with, and again, the choices that they're making. So I'm hoping it'll be a real girlfriend-to-girlfriend kind of conversation. I'm calling it the Lifestyle Mom Radio Cafe because I really want it to be an active conversation that women are having together, a community, and to, again, be an engaging conversation and very inspiring about the topics that really matter to a lot of women today.
Well, I think that's great. Dana, I thank you so much for coming on the show. I will be listening. And again, her show is going to premiere on Tuesdays. And is it going to be every Tuesday?
It'll be every Tuesday. It'll be 10 o'clock Pacific time, 1 o'clock East Coast time. And it premieres on Tuesday, January 5th.
You got it. All right. Thank you so much again, everyone.
Thank you, Alan.
And everyone that's listening, you're listening to Answers for the Family. That's Answers, the numeral for the family. If you're driving and you didn't catch any of those websites, just send something in to us and we will get them to you. And we are out of here.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza. Only on LA Talk Radio.